tuning in, and welcome, my friend, to the Town Hall Academy, your only and original weekly single subject forum for the aftermarket's perpetual student. You're going to find a ton of insight right here to help in shaping your decisions as you navigate out of the pandemic. Three outstanding panelists help you see some pathways to change as we talk about having a strong cash position, staffing, and the overall outlook ahead. I'm with Mike Chung, John Woffler, and Hunt Demarest. I've heard from many after they watched the Facebook Live of this episode that they really felt we gave some great advice and hit the nail on the head. We talked cash is king. We've talked about it before here on the show. Listen to what the shops did at the beginning of the pandemic and what they continue to do to preserve and protect their cash. Also, have you needed to make any staff reductions? Did you manage them or did they manage you? Did you keep your best people on the payroll? These topics and more covered in today's episode. A bunch of great insights here, and you can find them on the show notes page at remarkablereresults.biz/A178. Hey, a note about Shopware, who is an important partner sponsor of the Academy. It is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Shopware's shop management system allows customers to review, approve, and pay for repairs all in one place. Keep your staff and your customers safe while maintaining profits and keeping your customers happy. Learn more at getshopware.com/carm. Did you hear that? /carm. getshopware.com/carm. I got my own page. Hey, please remember, leaders are readers, and all books that are mentioned by my guests over the 800 episodes are presented on the books page. Go to remarkablereresults.biz/books to see a list of the books that have changed many aftermarket leaders.
You know, probably dozens of people saying, I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is the best thing to ever happen to me since I started my business.
Hey, more like this in a minute. You know, it's amazing how the virus is rearing its ugly head. You know, we need to be vigilant to stop the spread. I'm careful when I go out and wear my mask when in a crowd or close to people. I just got a haircut and had a temp scan. Businesses are doing all they can to prevent the spread and protect their people and their businesses, and you should too. Hey, I'm starting to record the video of Remarkable Results Radio podcast. Now, keep an eye out for them and watch them on desktop, mobile, YouTube, or even my website. The first one we did was 546, and it's so cool to watch the actual interview. Are you optimistic in your business for the year? Are you having the best June you've ever had? Do you own an RV? Yes, road trips are in order with your camper or not. All of this pent up get up and go will give us a great opportunity for our industry. I hope you seize the day. So we're going to talk about your cash position, staff reductions, and the overall outlook of the industry. And it may sound a little doom and gloomish, but it's not, because I think we're going to have a wonderful view of some statistics and data that the Auto Care Association pulled together for us. And we have to thank Mike Chung for this. Mike is the Director of Market Intelligence at the Auto Care Association. Hello, Mike.
Good afternoon. Hello, Carm. Thanks for having me today.
Glad to have you here. I mean, you're the guy that pulls all this data together, so we find out kind of what the industry feels and thinks based on things that happen and conditions. And COVID's one pretty damn big thing that, of course, I think we all want to know what's going on with it and what are people saying. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Hunt Demarest is with us. A great contributor to the show. Thanks, Hunt. CPA at Parmelis.
Thanks for having me.
He's been so involved with his customer base and helping them, if you will, navigate this pandemic as it comes to not only understanding PPP and EIDL and all that great stuff. So he's got a great perspective from many, many clients as to how all of this shakes out. And for the first time ever, and I've been chasing this guy for a long time, John Woffler is with us, facilitator, coach, instructor from the Bottom Line Impact Group from RLO Training. Hello, John.
Good morning, everybody. Big shout out to all my group members and coaching clients out there. And Carm, I've been trying to get on your show for the last 4 years. you've always got those heavy hitter shop owners like Joe Hansen and AJ Neely and Brian Bates and I'm really glad you could get me on here today. I really appreciate it.
You guys need to know that I groveled for this one, so I don't care what John says. I finally broke the ice with him, so thank you so much for being here. We've got a couple of slides that we do want to show, and let me start with this first one. It's about cash position, and even if you're on social media and you're on your smartphone, you may not necessarily see this that well. But it starts us off because, you know, this is data from AutoCare. And Mike, why don't you serve this up? And then when we're done looking at that slide for just a few minutes, then we're going to open up the discussion.
Sure thing. Thanks, Carm. And I'll just give a little context about the survey, if that's okay, too. So the AutoCare Association has been hosting a survey to the aftermarket industry since early April to really get a sense for, is the pandemic impacting your business? And one of the questions we've asked here reads as follows: how concerned are you about your organization's cash position to finance your current operations? And from early April through just a few days ago, we've had about 220 or so responses to this question. So again, how concerned are you about your organization's cash position to finance your current operations? And what we saw overall was that, I guess from April to May/June, we've seen an improvement regarding the concern. And if you see this slide, you'll see in the middle, this is the April segment that has a little bit more than a third of companies being highly concerned. And when I say highly concerned, I'm talking about what we call the top two box. That's the extremely concerned at the far right, which is the bright orange, and then the very concerned next to that, which is the gray. So in April, 36% were saying, I'm highly concerned. But in May and June, we're seeing that number drop a bit down to 16%. So one out of six in May and June. So I think that's a good point to just open up the discussion. Would you agree, Carm?
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate that. That's a great point. And, you know, cash is king, guys. And I don't need to tell that to Hunt or to John, because you probably have done a lot since March with your in trying to preserve cash. John, some of the ways that your clients have preserved cash.
Well, when this initially rolled out, my advice to all the group members and all the coaching clients was to really sharpen up your pencil. Get after the expense side of your financial statements and really dig deep to try to cut your expenses. You know, cutting the fixed expenses before you started cutting salaries, but be prepared. So I kind of set them up to say, what if your sales dropped by 50%? You know, do you have a plan to follow that all the way down and cut your expenses, you know, up to and including laying people off? Now, this was kind of before the PPP money, the EIDL, that was being talked about. So a lot of my members did a great job. They got after their expenses. They called vendors. They called suppliers. They called all of their subscriptions. They called everything and just basically said, are you giving me the best options, prices, subscriptions, whatever it is that you can? And a lot of them were really surprised that they found things that they'd been paying for a long time because they got complacent, that they were easily able to trim 20, 30% off of those expenses and overall reduce their operating expenses. So I think that the premise of the onset of the COVID really helped everybody get sharp and get back on their numbers and be prepared for what was to come next.
Hunt, as an accountant, I'm sure exactly what John was saying is the discussion that, you know, you've probably heard or had with your clients. Is this going to continue? I guess the most important thing is that we learn from this thing. And as our economy frees up and we get back to whatever the new normal is going to be, do you think the disciplines are going to continue?
I would hope so. I mean, I think that, like John was saying, there was a lot of clients that kind of been coasting along. You know, if your business had been on the upward trend and you'd start to be more and more profitable, what ends up happening is as you become more and more profitable, you're not as hungry as you are before, right? So you're not trying to drive sales as much. You're not maintaining your margins as closely as you were in the past. And some stuff, you know, you start to get a little bit fat on the fixed expenses. But a time like this is just a really good wake-up call to get people back to the numbers, as I've tried to preach to my clients all the time, and I'm sure John does as well, of, hey, we need to look at these numbers. We need to understand our budget. We need to understand where every single cent is going to make sure that we're maximizing our business. And I think that there's going to be a lot of stuff that I've seen for clients where they say, hey, we can do without that. I don't have a choice. I had to do without it because we just didn't have the money to do so. Maybe there's a different way that we can do this. Maybe there's a cheaper way that we can do this. And maybe that there's, you know, just, you know, this extra drive to make sure that we're doing the right things. You know, I also think that this was a wake-up call for a lot of people because the shops that weren't panicking through all this were not my extremely profitable shops. It's my shops that had enough money set aside and had a good understanding of their business to say, hey, if I do drop this, will I be okay? Do I have enough cash to burn? If you're making $500,000 a year, but you have $40,000 in cash in your bank account, you're not going to have a good time going through this. Versus on the flip side, if you're making $50,000 a year in profit and you have $500,000 in the bank, you did not miss a minute of sleep. You knew that you're going to be able to get through this. And I think that this was just kind of a really good wake-up call for a lot of people. It's, you know, this is kind of a trial run. We got to stress test in your business. I mean, for a lot of people early on, this was the hardest thing that ever happened to their business. And you really saw if you had enough cash or if you were underfunded.
Do you think that some of the PPP or the EIDL and however that's going to shape out based on, you know, moving some of it to a forgive loan or a little long-term loan, is that going to help cash positions?
For sure. I have a number of shops that were asking me, should I even get the PPP because I haven't skipped a beat? And so if you're still maintaining what your sales were before, you've essentially just got 2 months or 2.5 months of free payroll. And so for a lot of people, we saw the PPP account diminish when they've been spending it, but their operating account and their savings account has been increasing along the way.
I was just going to say that I was telling you guys earlier that I've had more calls these last few weeks from people that are saying I've got more available cash than I've ever had. I got the PPP money, like you told me to. I signed up for the EIDL money. I got $150,000. I already had $100,000, you know, set aside. What do I do with it all? And it's kind of a cash overflow situation right now for most of the clients that are out there. Not everybody, but if you went into this, as Hunt said, healthy, you probably were sleeping well and everything was okay and you're just watching, planning.
You know what I find, Mike, is it's so interesting. Here, the service professional relies on the distribution channel, the manufacturers, the distributors to help us. And the information that Mike brought us about, you know, cash positions, I think is critical because we need to rely on the goods getting to market, the goods getting made. You had a great webinar yesterday. I was on it from AutoCare and, you know, about the outlook. What was your sense of takeaway from that, Mike? Is everybody bullish on what's going to start happening?
Short answer is people are positive. The auto care industry is certainly a reliable, strong pillar of the economy. It's typically not as subject to, say, seasonal fluctuation and is a little bit more immune, shall we say, to recession-related economic downturns. If we think about construction, if we think about retail, we see seasonality there. But in aftermarket, it's typically, if anything happens, you might delay some of your maintenance a little bit, right? So in terms of overall, people are certainly optimistic for the long term. Certainly there are questions of, will there be second and subsequent waves? How is that going to perhaps affect a particular region of the United States? I appreciate your being able to attend our webinar yesterday. And I'd say overall things are positive, but kind of cautiously optimistic because I think as Hunt was saying, if you're not managing your organization, your business well, then you really need to, this is a really a strong wake-up call. And if I can just make two other points, I think one of the things that we were seeing in this particular survey response was, what are the things you're doing if you are concerned? And a lot of the things that Hunt and John mentioned, managing your cash flow, getting your payments, tightening your payments, really just being responsible fiscally, those are some of the things, applying for governmental loans.
Hey, you know, auto repair is a high-dollar, high-value transaction, and your customer sensitivity about how much it costs and why is never more important than when you ask them to pay the bill. While these conversations can sometimes feel awkward or uncomfortable, it's important that you don't fall down and cheapen your services at the final step. Shopware's shop management platform now offers a solution that helps you showcase the value and sophistication that you've invested throughout the repair. With our innovative digital workflow, customers can review, approve, and even pay for services right from their smartphone. Let remote pay work for you and improve your customer experience. Get started today. Visit getshopware.com for more information and to request a demo. So let's move on to the staff reductions. I'm going to pop up here the survey. In fact, Mike, I'll just put this up and let you talk over it. And I think this is going to be really interesting to talk about. There's a lot of dynamics going on with staffing.
The question we asked in this survey says, has your organization made staff reductions? We had five responses. The yellow band is no, and we don't expect to. Next to that is green is no, but we may do so in the near future. So the yellow and green are basically no. And then the blue, gray, and the orange are basically yes. The blue is yes, we've had temporary furloughs, and we expect to hire them back, bring them back in the coming months. Gray is yes, we've temporarily furloughed workers, but we're not sure if we're going to be bringing them back. And then orange on the far right is yes, we have laid off staff. We've segmented this into size of organizations. So the middle band is the smaller organizations, 1 to 500 employees, and then larger is 501 and up. And what we're seeing here is that about half, a little more than half of larger organizations have reduced staff. And you can see the breakout there. 26% have temporarily furloughed, but they expect to bring them back. And then the other 28% are some combination of we've laid people off or we've temporarily furloughed and we're not sure if we're going to bring them back. Whereas the smaller companies have been less prone to lay people off. They're about one third have reduced their staffs versus one half of the larger organizations. So I think that's a great jumping off point for the group to discuss.
Boy, that does say a lot, doesn't it?
So what I saw initially, and again, as we're preparing for this potential downturn, I think you and I deal with the smaller shops in the industry, and the survey was a lot more responses were from the larger end of the industry. So I think our clientele are typically a lot more maneuverable, small shops. They don't have to call a board meeting. They just make a decision and run with it. So, you know, watching very carefully what was happening, and April and May were, you know, either one of those months was probably the one of the worst months in recent history for a lot of the shops, but it was a relatively short time period. So even if they didn't have the disaster funding, they were able to, you know, ride it out. Some went to shorter hours, alternating, sending people home. But not very many shops actually laid people off or furloughed them. And if they did, it was a relatively short period of time. I did a quick survey yesterday of the group members, and I had about 50 responses. And everybody right now is fully staffed for the most part. Nobody's had people that they've, you know, had laid off. A lot of them are looking for people now. And the funny thing that I found is that I anticipated and predicted that with the dealership shutting down and the weaker shops maybe laying people off, that there would be a lot of technicians available to hire when the time came. But I think it's tougher now than it was prior to going into this. People who are not working are either not working because they're comfortable living on the unemployment funding that was added, or they're just not quite ready to come back to work. They'd like to enjoy the summer. So I could place a lot of technicians if I had them available in really good shops, but they're just not quite available. So if there was any layoffs, and as Hunt said earlier, you know, a lot of the shops we have, you know, that we're working with are 5 to 10 employees. And so if you take a key player out of that, you're losing a high percentage of your workforce. And luckily, the sales didn't decline so dramatically for so long that they had to lay them off. So most people kept everybody employed, maybe not fully, but it was a short period of time and they got through it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that really the biggest thing that we saw was there was a number of shops that maybe would put their C technicians or lube technicians on furlough where they just said, hey, you know, we just don't have the work for, you know, it to justify that right now. I saw some shops that did put people on furlough that were kind of asking for it, you know, that were like, hey, I have a little bit of some health issues here. My wife doesn't really want me coming into work, whatever it might be. I'm with John. Most of our shops, they said, hey, my core people, I'm not letting go. I will pay them before anything else. You know, Napa can get paid when they get paid. WorldPAC can get paid when they get paid. I'm making sure that my team is in place. But I saw a number of shops also looking at this saying, hey, if we do need to start making changes, what is the person that we need to make a change on? And I saw a lot of people saying, hey, you know what? That one technician that we've been kind of, you know, on the fence about getting rid of, Why don't we just get rid of them? Why am I going to, you know, eat all this money to pay them to be here when I don't even like them being here and they're not producing anyways? Let's just get rid of them right now. And then, you know, we know business is going to pick back up. Let's look for a better replacement to it. The biggest thing, I think that would have happened a lot more, but when some of these PPP rules initially came out, there was some verbiage in there where it looked like you had to rehire the same person that you let go. I think if they would have known from the get-go that if you let go of someone, you replace them with someone else, doesn't have to be the same person, you're going to be okay. We would have seen a lot more people doing that.
I agree. And right now, and it was funny, I think you probably saw it too, where the focus became not so much who am I laying off or how many am I going to lay off or if I'm going to lay anybody off, but more what do I need to do to get that PPP money forgiven? Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, encouraging people to not count on that, not, you know, do something they wouldn't otherwise do from a business perspective, just because that money might be forgiven. And I think most people listened to that. They made the changes they needed to make. The PP money, they're still going to stay in the guidelines. And of course, the rules were always changing, and they actually got better as far as the time period, the forgiveness period, the percentages of employees that you had to retain, those things. So I think overall, unless something changes dramatically, most people who got the PP money will get it forgiven. But boy, what a bunch of stress trying to figure out those rules. And still stressful because it's coming down to the end of their period. So
that's the old, hi, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Sign me up. Right?
Sign me up.
And I'll just add one point to the stats that I showed. I looked at the data across the different organization types, and while, say, warehousing distributors may have had more layoffs, that bright orange bar, generally speaking, it was about the same rate across organization type, about half of the larger organizations. And as mentioned, there are a fair number of manufacturing organizations, fair number of warehousing distributors. So, you know, that's not necessarily the audience we're talking about in this part of the conversation. But yeah, very interesting statistics.
I think the dealerships may have an opportunity here versus, you know, the 2008 financial bubble and the crisis. There were an awful lot of paring out of dealerships. Now that's not happening. I think they're down to the level and the size that they want. They may be able to correct themselves a whole lot quicker in getting share back. And I'm wondering how you guys look at that, what kind of advice you'd be giving to your clients.
I mean, I would say that the biggest thing that I saw is that the small independent shops, you know, the kind of shops that I deal with, they were doing everything in their power to maintain their employees. You know, the weird thing about this crisis that we're going through is that there was tons of people out there that had a job for 20 years that said, I will never, ever get laid off. And then the next day they got laid off. You know, one of these things that was a complete shock to, you know, pretty much all types of businesses and all different sizes. I would say that the smaller businesses are ones that were more insulated from that because they can pivot. They can just say, hey, you know what? We've made money over the years. We've set ourselves up so that we are going to make sure we get through this and everyone's going to get paid. You know, the dealerships as normally are just much, much larger organizations. I know some dealerships, you know, that just closed down everything, sales, service, parts, everything. Just one day said, we're done. A lot of the service sides of things also, you know, this is all across the country. I mean, I deal with people in, you know, 49 states or shops in 49 states. And I've heard it time and time again that they came in one day and they axed, you know, 80 to 85% of their technicians. And I think for a lot of people, you know, they look at the dealership as the safer alternative. They look at that as more of a guaranteed paycheck. You know, the dealership is always going to be there. It's too big to fail. There's always work for me to do. The independent side is the risky one. Hey, if I go to John's shop, is there going to be enough hours for me to turn so I can make a good living? Where really, I think now what we've seen is, you know, the aftermarket come of age and say, hey, you know what? No, these are even stronger businesses than what you guys have. You know, how many clients that I've had that have people drive into their parking lot and said, well, you guys got cars here. You guys look like you're open. Yeah, we've been open. We're going to be open. All my guys are getting paid. You know, this is just how we're going to get through this. So I think if anything, you know, the aftermarket is going to be, you know, even bigger because of that, to really what they did and stuck by their team and made sure that they made it through and made sure that, you know, their team and their family made this through.
I found it interesting that the dealerships were so quick to shut down almost all of their operations. I mean, dealerships are typically the car sales, the service department, you know, the collision, the parts, and they usually, you know, sale, if car sales go up, the focus comes off of the service department. As car sales goes down, the focus usually comes onto the service department as a profit center. So I found it interesting that as soon as the car sales started to decline, they just shut everything down, where they could have really actually gained market share had they kept their service departments operating. And they're going to have a hard time, I think, getting the technicians back. I think one of the other side effects of this is I've noticed even prior to this, but especially now, that the cost of labor is increasing. Technicians are continuing to demand and get, rightfully so, higher rates of pay. And so now we're forced to look at our whole pricing structure, labor rates, and things of that nature in order to stay competitive in the market. And benefits are also another big thing. You know, the cost of benefits for smaller shops like we have Hunt, that, you know, that benefits are increasing, and the larger entities are able to offer more benefits sometimes. You always need to do an analysis. And when you've got a competitor, a dealership, or whoever you're competing with, you always want to find out what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are, and what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, and, you know, position yourself in such a way that you're attractive to the technician, you're attractive to the customer in whatever way. And I think, again, because we've got small businesses, we're able to adapt and adjust much more quickly than the bigger companies. And that's going to be where we're successful coming out of this, I think.
Such a great point, John. Thank you for that. I am this huge believer in an SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats review of a company. I've spoken to people an awful lot about that. In fact, back in my other life, I used to enjoy doing SWOTs at companies that, you know, I was part of. And it really helps you understand with an entire engaged team how they look at the strengths, the weaknesses, and the opportunities and threats of the business that they work in. The cool thing about it is having them getting their opinion of what the outside world is, as, you know, threats and or opportunities to a company. And then after it's done, the key is you go through each of the SWOT areas, you label them A, B, C as to what we could work on, what should we be doing, and all the A's end up becoming a strategic plan for the business. And, you know, exactly, you know, what you need to do. And then when all that's done, you assign responsibilities of all of those to the team that was part of the SWOT. It's a great exercise to put a business on track and do some great things. So listen, anybody who's listening, and if you have a facilitator coach, please have that individual help you facilitate an SWOT on your business. Good stuff. Thank you.
Regarding the threats, I just want to kind of double down on some of the things that Hunt and John were talking about with this threat of employees who may be furloughed getting this really nice, comfortable benefit, shall we say. And that's probably a threat that has not really been observed or experienced quite as much. And that we've been hearing that at the association too, where shop owners, shop managers are saying, yeah, you know, we want to get people back, but they're telling us basically, oh, you know, I don't really feel comfortable going back. But then when they talk to their colleagues, it's like, oh, these benefits are hard to pass up. So that it's just really been an interesting wrench in the works, if you will. So to Hunt's point about kind of if you need to make revisions to your team, have people reapply for their jobs, we're seeing where shops that have been opening up or have been managing themselves well. And this is one of the points, this is the one that I should have written down, Carm, so I remembered it now. But in terms of shops kind of managing themselves well, this is an opportunity to continue to position themselves well to take care of their customers, whether it's touchless service, pickup, drop-off, loaner cars. Shops that are a little bit more on the forward edge of service, they've been able to kind of keep their position and do right by their customers, and that just enhances customer loyalty as well.
So many things have come out of this, guys. You know, I've been taking so many notes about what show should we be doing, what should guests should I be interviewing, what kind of topics do we need to be breaching to the industry. And I wrote down digital relationship, making appointments, web-based, accepting, you know, will the customers accept maintenance, and how long will no-touch service, you know, go on. And and I don't have answers for all of this, and everyone does, and they know what they're doing, but there's so many, if you will, balls up in the air. And one of them, John, that you just mentioned, which I think is probably the biggest one, is the pay issue. And will post-COVID new normal going forward have everything to do with rethinking the pay and the benefit plans and training and accountability and workflow and what's going on with your thinking and your clients?
We had a discussion yesterday. One of the clients in the discussion said that I'm stepping up and now having to pay $40, you know, an hour to a technician, you know, and I mean, wages are, you know, typically 30 to 35. And so 40 is a pretty good stretch on that. So we thought about that. And then we thought about other things. Somebody brought up a convenience fee for taking credit cards. And somebody else brought up, well, maybe we should be charging for a concierge service, the pickup and delivery that we're doing. Maybe we want to keep that, but maybe we want to, you know, promote that as a strength, a benefit, and see, you know, if customers would adapt to that. And then it came right back to, well, customers are typically only going to want to see so many line items on their repair about these extra charges. So maybe that all needs to be rethought into a higher labor rate.
Someone said they went to a restaurant, you know, open, limited seating, and there was a service charge, a COVID charge on the bill at the bottom. And they were telling me the story. I blew a cork.
Me too.
Though I wasn't at that restaurant, they told me the story and I said, I would never go back. My point was, is that, see this menu? I remember what it was post-COVID or pre-COVID. And if you had to put a dollar or $2 on a sandwich or a meal, please don't charge me a COVID charge for cleaning and wiping and disposable menus. Don't do that. Don't charge for concierge service. Increase the labor rate and just say, hey, listen, we'll come and pick you up. We'll drop you off. We'll do whatever we have to do because this is what the new normal is like. Exceptional customer service.
A lot of times the shop owner themselves is the one that's most afraid of making any sort of pricing increases. But realistically, if you look at most of your customers that you're dealing with, they are not coming to you because you're the cheapest guy in town. If they are, then that's your first problem right there. But if you don't have belief in your own value and the pricing that you're giving to someone else, then that's going to be reflective when you deliver that to the customer. And so, you know, this business is hard enough, let alone if you're not making money from it. You need to charge that's a fair amount so that you can be profitable, so that you can be there for the long term, and also charge a fair amount so that you can afford to, you know, get high paying technicians, so that you can afford to pay $40 an hour, because that's really the best way to take care of your customers. If you're going to be the cheapest guy in town, you're going to be cutting corners, and it's going to affect the service at some point.
And I feel like there's some sort of level of setting and managing expectations, because if you tell me as a customer you're going to charge an extra $2 for all the COVID, at least I'm told and I can choose whether or not to go there. If I'm told that we're raising our prices on sandwiches or oil changes to account for extra cleaning, disinfection, at least I'm told and I can shop accordingly and not be surprised. And then I suppose I'm no professional accountant, so perhaps Hunt, you can comment on this more, but from an accounting and reporting standpoint, I could see how it'd be easier to have like a COVID charge than, okay, let's extract 3% at a labor rate and attribute it to COVID-related expenses.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things too. I think like Carm says, people, it's not really the dollars and cents, a lot of times just the optics of it. You know, there's different ways to slice a cake. And, you know, if you could have a COVID charge, you could have the concierge charge, you can have all this. But to me as a consumer, I would say, well, it seems like I'm getting nickel and dimed here. I don't want to be nickel and dimed.
Wait a minute. It just hit me. I always love to watch what's going on in the rest of the world, right? Look way outside the box, break the box concept. Have you ever seen the commercials where the cell phone competing companies are saying, we only have one charge, you know, and somebody's saying, oh my God, what are all these fees? They're looking at their bill.
Like your Comcast bill is like 5 pages long.
If the trend in advertising is keep it simple, stupid, why would we want to add charges on a bill?
Yeah, where a lot of shops are going to a one line item. Hey, this is the work we did. Here's the price. You know, keep it simple.
And we've talked about that for years. In some states, that's illegal, but I think it's a better way to go. It's a, you know, one price for the whole. We're stuck in this 1950s ideal of how to invoice out parts and labor and labor rates and pay plans. I won't get into that side of it, but the we need to shift. And I think all of these things that are happening are forcing us to revisit. You guys know what a night drop box is, right? So why is it called a night drop box?
So you can drop it off after hours under cover.
Okay, after, but so now with this touchless service, that night drop box has become the central focus of our operations. People are using that all day long and all night long to drop off vehicles. People have bought these fancy key dispensers, key locks, where people can punch in the codes when they pick up their car. So it's been a real shift in that respect from, and I like that. I think you could be more convenient to customers offering those options and actually promoting that as a uniqueness rather than just delegating it to maybe somebody that would want to drop it off or after hours. When you think about it, you can also accommodate handling customers more readily when you don't have that eight and wait in the morning where you got five people lined up because that's the only option you have to take them in, or at night when they're wanting to pick up their vehicles and you're forced to stay open to wait for that one person that, you know, doesn't get off work till six. So having these things has really helped revisit and get refocused on some of these things that are actually a benefit to the customer and to the shop. Yeah. We just were never forced to use them that way.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things, too, where you don't know what your customers want or don't want until you try something new. I mean, there's a lot of people that have been running the same exact business. You know, I have some people that are third, fourth generation. Oh, this is how we've always done it. And now with something like this, it's given us a different opportunity to say, hey, let's try some things. Let's try pickup and delivery. Let's try touchless service. Let's try, you know, text messaging based stuff. And let's see what our customers like. Because at the end of the day, we're still fixing a car and we're making sure that it's safe. Why do we care how we do any of these other things? You know, where's the hubris that we think that we know the best way to do this? If that's what our customers like, then that's what we're going to do.
There was a question here. Hunt, this may be for you. PPP period for forgiveness, 8 weeks or 24. Do we choose? And what is pro and cons of either forgiveness periods?
Really, the long and short of it is if you've completely used up your money in the 8 week period, there is no reason that you need to push it to 24 weeks. If you are like using gray area stuff, if you're like barely by the skin of your teeth getting to 8 weeks, then don't even bother with the 8 weeks and go to the full 24 weeks. There's no election that you have to make. You automatically get to 24 weeks if you want to use it. The only thing that I'd recommend doing is let your bank know that you're going to take the full 24 weeks.
Thank you, Tom Palermo. I think what has happened over the past few months will bring many shops to the realization that we need to charge what we are worth. John, you've been doing this for decades, and now all of a sudden we needed a pandemic for people to start to realize the labor rates need to go up. We need to pay our people more money. We need to have an exceptional customer experience, and on and on and on. And we need to get, you know, we charge what we are worth. So I have a feeling we are in a watershed moment and an opportunity for our industry. In fact, the people that I've talked to, they're on fire. They're busy. They're 2-3 weeks out. They've never had more business, air conditioning, battery stuff. They're moving people into maintenance. They're going on road trips. Again, if you were running a great business and you were paying attention to your coach, your facilitator, you're on fire. You're probably going to have the best year ever. You're probably going to grow, you know, shop count, add on bays. You're going to do the things that it takes to reward yourself and your people for doing a lot of things right over the years. Proof of concept of everything we should have been doing is happening right now. Okay, that's my little piece. I'm on my soapbox, but let's move on, Mike, to our next topic. And basically, this was a thing we called overall, Mike, the overall outlook for the organization in the next 12 months.
Sure. So this was at the end of the survey after we had asked, how is your business performance being impacted? Are you reducing staff? Are you experiencing supply chain disruptions? Has demand for your service gone up or down, stayed the same? So at the end, we had this question about what's your overall outlook for your organization for the next 12 months? And it's a 5-point Likert scale from basically extremely negative on the left-hand side, yellow, somewhat negative, green, positive on the gray and then the orange. And what we're seeing is it leans to the negative, the somewhat negative. That green bar is kind of predominates, if you will. But I'd like to call out that while it is slightly more pessimistic overall, 54% in that top bar are somewhat or extremely negative. The second and third bars show the course over time. And April, you see on the right that we saw positivity 23%. So a quarter of organizations who participated in the survey in April had a somewhat positive or extremely positive outlook. And then in May and June, we saw 38% saying somewhat or extremely positive outlook. So I think there's a lot we can go into there, but overall, while it is a little bit on the pessimistic side, it's trending towards more positive.
Everybody that I've talked to in the last couple of weeks is having probably the best June they've ever had. I always tell people when things slow down, cars are still needing maintenance, cars are still breaking. People may just not be spending money right now, but that's a pent-up demand. And so right now, I think the floodgates have opened up and the demand is now trying to be filled. So now the shops that were, you know, a little slower in April and May are overwhelmed and they're happy. And it should continue. This is typically the best, strongest time of year anyway. So, you know, couple that, the pent-up demand, the floodgates open up and they're overwhelmed. Interesting, I've got a couple of clients that work on in the RV repairs and service, and they're just absolutely hammered. I think people are wanting to get out and hit the open road and now bringing in their RVs and trailers and whatever else. And those guys are just slammed now too. So right now it's very busy looking forward. I believe the summer is going to be strong. One other thing I heard over the last week or two, up until probably 3-4 weeks ago, I hadn't heard of any COVID direct cases related to any of the shops that I work with, like immediate employees or families of employees. But in the last week, I've heard of several very close encounters of employees, spouses of employees. The hotspots have flared up that weren't there before. Phoenix is one of them. And so I think we have to be a little cautious about, you know, going out and having a parade. You still need to stay diligent. You still need to stay on top of your numbers. You still need to, you know, up your service level game and continue marketing. A lot of people think just because we're busy, we can just stop advertising or promoting. You still need to be out there, and you can gain market share right now because other shops have shut down or continue to run at a lower level. And you can gain market share, but you need to be out there, not aggressively price point or discount point, but maybe packaging the services a little different, focusing on the, you know, get out of quarantine and people's need to get out and hit the open road. So the advertising shifting, but you need to stay on it. I'm optimistic for the rest of the year, but a little bit cautious just about the uncertainty of where this is all going to go.
Mike, I want to go back to you. Interesting survey from May where, you know, it's still pretty pessimistic from the auto care members. I would love to know what it is now here in June. But the other point is this. Is it top down that starts seeing the turn on, or is it the fact that here comes the service professional? They're probably buying more parts and needing so much within the distribution system. I hope they know what's going on and they keep up.
So the survey, we have a pretty wide spectrum of organizations across the supply chain. So we have warehousing, we have distribution, we have manufacturers, manufacturers reps, business services, vehicle repair shops, service centers, tire shops. And, you know, there are some subtle differences between each of those groups. And one of the uncertainties is vehicle miles traveled. I think we've all seen vehicle miles traveled really drop as the pandemic started. And it kind of bottomed out, and it's been coming up a little bit in the past month. And I think to John's point, as the summer comes on, RVs, recreational vehicles, Nathan Shipley of NPD Group yesterday talked about that sector is doing very well. People have got that cabin fever, not really ready to go on a plane. a little bit leery of hotels, perhaps. So RVs, if that's one reason why that segment is booming, and with summer coming on, makes a lot of sense. Those other uncertainties is offices, where it looks like a lot of us are working from home. And how long will that continue? How is that going to play out over the next couple of months? School and so forth. So I think that's a little bit of the reason why people are a little bit perhaps conservative in this survey, to say, well, while things are getting better, we are at a new normal. Where are we setting our goals for now? And one of the things I'll do after this is kind of look at that year over year comparison. John, you made an interesting point that April, May, June, those are really busy months. And it'll be interesting to compare April, May of and June of this year versus April, May and June last year to kind of see, well, while perhaps April was really slow, has May and June turned stronger than it might have ordinarily? So
thank you for that, Mike. Very, very intuitive. John, it was last Friday, I believe, we put an episode out, episode 546 of Remarkable Results Radio, of a COVID case inside of a shop. And it was from Kirk Richardson out of Michigan, and one of his techs got COVID. He's a multi-shop operator, and he explained the discovery, how they cleaned, what they did, some mistakes they made along the way, the research they did for cleaning, and the quarantine thing. So it's a very enlightening episode, 546 last Friday. Hunt, overall, talk to us about your perspectives.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the survey probably is, you know, a lot of shop owners that I talk to can probably err on the side of pessimistic a lot of times, like, why me? Why is this going on? But overall, I mean, I don't think I've had one person tell me this is the worst thing to ever happen to their shop. And I've had, you know, probably dozens and dozens of people saying, I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is the best thing to ever happen to me since I started my business. I've had a number of shops that have gotten behind on sales tax and payroll tax, which were able to get that caught up. I've had a number of people that were able to start this business, you know, and, you know, this is probably goes for most shops out there, is shops as a whole are underfunded when they start. Most people go and they start with the bare minimum that they can to buy their business, and they almost start out with no working capital. And in order to really build up working capital, not only do you have to be extremely profitable, you have to be extremely diligent with your cash. And what we see from most businesses is they just don't have sufficient working capital on a daily basis. And so this was kind of an injection for people, not only if you were behind on stuff, but also just to say, hey, you know what? Remember we've been talking about before that zero shouldn't be your zero, $40,000 or $50,000 should be your zero. Here, now we have an injection. You are able to hit the ground running. You have no excuses right now. You know so much more than you did 10, 15, 20 years ago when you started this. Now we have a true clean slate. Let's do this. You know, all the different things we've changed. And let's make a run at this and let's see what we can make out of it. But I would say overall, I mean, the energy that I have with my clients, you know, when I talk to them, has been overall positive, and people are looking forward to it.
I've been also, you know, encouraging clients to look for opportunities out there. Some of the weaker shops that may not recover, some of the older shop owners who may just use this as an exit strategy, exit excuse. I think there's some really good opportunities to add locations out there. I believe there's some great opportunities to acquire the customer databases, phone numbers, things like that from those shops. So just encouraging everybody to keep an eye out what's happening in their market, the other shops. And if you're flush with cash, you've got your processes and systems dialed in, you've got your profitability dialed in, and you're ready to take the next step to multi-shop ownership or add more locations if you're a multi-shop owner, I think this is a great time to look for that opportunity going forward.
I'd just like to point out, when I look at the Outlook results, the service, repair, body, and tire shops are more positive. I didn't call it out in this chart, but that's the overall result for everybody, 220 people in the survey. Now, it's a relatively small sample size for the shops, only 17, so it's still kind of qualitative. Or directional, but we had 41% who were extremely positive or somewhat positive, 29% who were neutral, and 30% who were slightly negative, extremely negative. So in that way, the shops in this survey are a bit more positive, shall we say. So it's worth pointing that out.
Yeah, and who would have thought, like you just said, John, the opportunities that we have in front of us in spite of this incredibly life-changing I don't know, once in a lifetime thing that happened, and I hope it never happens again. I hope we learn from something. But hey, look, it's so fascinating to talk about cash position, staff reductions, and the overall outlook. And I think we took some liberties and we went left or right of the discussion points, and which was good. This is something I just love to do because, you know, I'm like a squirrel and I'll chase a nut and all of a sudden something comes up and, you know, I just got to talk about it. So thank you so much, Michael Chung, for bringing us the survey and for coming on the show, Director of Market Intelligence from the Auto Care Association, one of the most important associations we have in our industry. Hunt Demarest is also with us and has been a great contributor, CPA at Parmelis, an accounting firm, and they just specialize in the automotive aftermarket in shops. John Woffler, also finally getting him on my show, facilitator, coach, instructor from the BLIG, the Bottom Line Impact Group from RLO Training. Hey, have a great weekend. Thank you so much for your contributions, guys.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Pleasure meeting everybody. I hope everybody stays safe and has a great weekend as well.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.